walked in and asked for a chip sandwich. BBC News.
In an hour in Open Book, the comedian and author Russell Cain will discuss Ian Fleming's James Bond novels. Now, the classic serial. Today we begin a three-part dramatisation of the novel which won the German author Thomas Mann the Nobel Prize for Literature, Buddenbrooks, dramatised for radio by Judith Adams.
My tale begins near the wild Baltic Sea in the town of Lübeck. Built of red brick a few miles up the tidal river Trava, she's the largest German port on the Baltic and queen of the ancient Hanseatic League. Proud, independent, prosperous Lübeck. It's 1835 and 26 years before I'm born to play a part in the Buddenbrook family's modest but compelling little opera. Even so, once upon a time, on a stormy day in October, we can enter the fine drawing room of the Buddenbrooks' newly acquired home on Meng Street. Quite the best part of town.
What comes next?
Yes. C'est la question, ma très chère Mademoiselle Tony.
Father, there you go again.
What the devil does come next, then?
We mustn't mock sacred things, Father.
You confuse the child.
I confuse the child.
Tony, and God has given
me... I know, I have it. And God has given me and preserves me body, soul, eyes, ears, and all my limbs, my reason and all my senses, and the daily he bestows on me, clothes and shoes, meat and drink, house and home, wife and child, acre and cows, and...
Papa!
No, John. Mademoiselle Tony, how be your wife these days, and your old cow, and your acre of soil? Tell us a sack of your wheat, Mademoiselle Buddenbrook. I'll give you 2 marks for it, a lors. Is that a fair price, you think, Frau Berger?
Oh, Johann, oh, mon vieux. He's always the same, isn't he, Betsy?
Old Johann and his Antoinette laugh the same laugh. Their son, Consul Johann Buddenbrook, called John to distinguish him from Papa, and wife Elizabeth, laugh as a mark of respect. Dainty little 8-year-old Antony, enthroned on her grandfather's knee, isn't to be diverted by laughter.
For which I am bound to thank him, praise him, and moreover, serve and obey him, forever and ever.
Amen.
I know something, Grandfather.
Mon Dieu, she knows something.
Frau Consul Buddenbrook.
Come in, Ida.
Everything is ready in the dining room. Some of the ladies and gentlemen are here and coming up the stairs.
Wait, she knows something.
Yes, listen. If a lightning bolt hits a tree, it starts a fire. But if a thunderbolt hits a tree, it doesn't.
What? What is this nonsense?
Frau Antoni, you must come now with me.
Yes, my child. Now, this is a great day, and all good little girls are quiet and helpful.
Wait, no. Hold your head up, Tony, to each his own. And who taught her this thunderbolt nonsense, eh? You, Edie Jungmann, one of your damn Prussian fairy tales, a muddle ahead?
The boys must nearly be home from school, I think, Tony. Go and look out of the window for your brothers.
Yes, Mama.
Papa, it's harmless nonsense. And our guests are arriving.
Harmless? Fact is fact, and fiction. Harmless, indeed. Well, our guests are arriving, but my boys are not here yet to entertain. Fact.
I can see them, Grandfather, coming up the street.
Oh.
Herr Hofsteller and the doctor. Christian's waving his arms like a puppet and pulling faces, and the men and Tom are laughing at him.
Then, ladies, let us go and meet them all. The salt and bread feast shall begin our new lives in Meng Street, and we will live fat and merry here ever after.
Fat and merry here ever after.
Oh. Herr Consul?
Yes, Ida?
A letter was delivered this afternoon from your stepbrother.
From Gotthold?
Yes, Herr Consul, addressed to your father. Should I give it to him? Only last time...
No, later. I'll take it. Thank you, Ida. See the storm shutters are put in place before you order the food out of the kitchens, will you?
Yes, Herr Consul. The wind will be bad tonight, I think.
The landscape room, as the Buddenbrook family call it, stands empty a moment before the shutters are brought in. I never saw this room myself, of course. I must piece the early parts of the story together as best I can. One book in particular is my Bible in this great task, the Buddenbrook Family Chronicle. Until the moment comes when I enter the stage, I can only assert my divine right as an artist to, well, make up the rest.
Such splendid fellows, Madam Consul. We met him in the street. Fine boys. Now, Thomas, now there's a serious, steady lad. And all to the good of the firm, say I. But, my goodness me, young Christian.
Oh, Christian.
Oh, something of an incroyable, no? A fine mimic, very witty. He has Herr Stengel to a T, eh, Doctor?
He does. Oh, Stengel taught me, you know. Thought he'd be long gone.
Oh, Christian, show us again.
Outwardly, my dear child, you are innocent and smooth, but inwardly, oh, inwardly, your soul is black, black as peach.
The boy's a monkey, looks like one too, a little devil.
Thomas, my son.
Father?
Would you be so good as to take this key to the second cellar on the right?
The Malmsey, Papa.
Two bottles, my boy.
Yes, Papa.
Papa, why is it called the Salt and Bread Feast when we have soup and fish and smoked ham and... Oh! Plum pudding!
Pudding! Thank you, Ida. It looks quite beautiful.
And still a small blue flame.
Leave it, Christian, till it cools. The Salt and Bread Feast celebrates a new life in a new home. And friends and family come to bring us these two simple foods through which, as it were, we live and prosper. Thanks be to God.
Yes.
But they bring pies and sweet pastry, Papa, not bread at all. And the salt comes in lots and lots of silver caskets with pepper and mustard and spices.
It all makes work for me, boy. A doctor must have work to do as well as the farmer and grain merchant, I think.
Don't leave out the humble wine merchant, eh?
Your health, Cubbin. Doctor?
Health, Buddenbrook.
Compliments, Doctor, Herr Buddenbrook. What a house, eh?
These bottles, Papa.
Just right, my boy. Fill the glasses for us, will you?
So then why did the Rotten Camp sell? Hadn't they built it specially for themselves? When was that?
1682. Mm. They lived here a century and a half. Then the firm broke down suddenly, just at the end. Well, he must have known what Gelmack was up to. Why he didn't do a thing about it, God knows.
Rotten Camp took on the wrong partner, Jean. Pure and simple. Gelmack speculated on the firm's name in secret, et voila! Firm's good name ruined, family passé.
Rattenkamp was like a man paralysed, not able to stop himself letting everything slip through his fingers. Almost as though it was meant to be.
I say, Jean, that's just one of your E-Day meant to be moonshine. The man just lost his grip, that's all. Christian, don't stuff yourself with so much pudding. You're eating like a thresher.
My dear friends and neighbours, all this while young Master Thomas has poured honeyed nectar of the gods into our glasses. Therefore, be so kind as to rise, gentlemen, and join me in a toast to our esteemed host and his most beautiful wife, to their noble parents and their delightful offspring. Good wishes for health and happiness to you all, most honoured Buddenbrooks, present and absent. Long may you prosper.
Long may you prosper!
And, how could I resist? On the occasion of a joyous housewarming. Honoured friends, this modest lay, both industry and beauty prizing, toasts Vulcan as he rests to play with Venus from the sea arising. May no future storms distress with unkind blasts.
Soon, the older men pass with the ladies and children back to the landscape room, led by Frau Consul Elisabeth, still blushing after the poet's courtly bow in her direction when naming Venus. Her husband leads the men of business downstairs and along a tall, wide, stone-flagged passageway which cuts through the house from front to back.
The domestic rooms above and here. The kitchens to our right, and to the left, the offices.
Excellent, Buddenbrook. You can run the grain cart straight between them through the house,
The warehouses along Back Lane. It's very convenient.
Except in a gale, of course. You might like to relocate the billion room, my friend.
Don't worry, Doctor. Ida will have cigars and brandy and a blazing fire waiting for us.
Oh, Napoleon himself drank no better cognac. It's your play, Kirpin, I think.
Oh!
Ah, Buddenbrook, I remember that night in 1813 when your mother rushed up to me in disarray.
The Frenchies had entered her house.
Good God! You think your woolen favour is going to make Travemund in a storm like this? That's a graveyard win for both, Zanis.
We must wait and pray.
Maybe we'll have another 1824. Floods from Bruges to St. Petersburg. If that happens again, how will the old league bear up, I wonder?
Miss Damenblast, your play, Buddenbrook.
We are in God's hands, Hofstetter. But it might be wise to think about this new customs union that's been suggested, don't you think? Closer ties to other German states instead of relying on Amsterdam and Riga and other members of the league.
You know my mind on that, Buddenbrook. Prussian power-mongering. What's wrong with the old ways? Independence and honour, eh? A toast, gentlemen. The old Hanseatic League, eh? Heart trumps head, eh, Buddenbrook?
To our dear Hanseatic League.
The League!
But change will come, I fear. It always does.
Gentlemen, I have something for you. Another little poem came my way the other day, and I saved it. Not one for the ladies, I regret to say. When Marechal de Saxe and the King's Pompadour went driving one day in a gilt coach and four, a soldier who saw them cried out far and wide, "There's the sword of our king and his sheath side by side." Just a joke, Buddenbrook. Une petite chose française, your father would say.
A prodigious night, Herr Consul. Milestone in the town's history.
Good night, gentlemen. Hofstetter, your poem was much appreciated.
Ah, but which poem, eh?
Come along, Kirpin. Your good wife's waiting for you in the rain. Good night, son.
Good night. Good night, all. God be praised. It went well, I think.
Absence? Present in absence? What the devil does Hofstetter mean to honoured Buddenbrook's present and absent?
Oh, Papa. My sister in Frankfurt? The Hamburg Duchamp, perhaps?
You know perfectly well he meant Gotthold, wily old hypocrite. He drinks your mums, he leers at your wife and questions your patrimony all in one sentence.
Well, he is a poet. That's cold here, Father. Let's go upstairs and see the candles here.
I'm ill, Mama. Damned ill. Dr. Grandma said
you'll be better. That boy. Didn't I tell him not to stuff like a peasant? How do you think he was dying? Always it's a drama with Christian. Oh, pass me the snuffer, Jean. There'll be wax on the harmonium.
Father.
What is it? I saw your face earlier. Something's on your mind.
Don't be angry, will you? This was delivered just before the party, and I
got thought hold it again. Third time's the curse.
Father!
Voila!
We must read what he says.
We must we? We know what he says. He wants more money. He wants to have married his shop girl for love, defied his father, sired three useless girls and ugly into the bargain, accepted a generous settlement from me, and now claim we owe him more. And next, if we give way to him, then what comes next?
The same.
Exactement. And there's an end of it. Now the candles.
Father. This business of Gotthold depresses me. A bitter feud with your eldest son, my own brother.
Stepbrother, half-brother, don't forget, his coming into the world killed his sainted mother. Always with Gotthold trouble.
A family should be united, Father. Disunity is like a hidden crack in a building.
Stuff! Did you and I marry for love? No. Well, first stuff I did, but she was a merchant's daughter, not a shop girl. Anyway, she died. Have we regretted our choices since? No, we marry for the sake of the firm. And fondness comes later. And the firm rewards us with all this we see around us here today. Gotthold is not one of us by his own choosing. We are the family now, links in a chain. One breaks, we discard it. and draw tighter in. What are you doing?
Calculating. If you give in now over compensation for my share in this house, it sets a precedent. Gotthold will demand equal shares with my sister and me after your death. No, you're perfectly right, Papa. The chain would grow weak. My children would face ruin and decay.
Bravo. The children are the point, and there's an end of it. En avant, Tibet.
Of all his children, Tony is the closest to Jean's heart. 3 years after the Grand Sultan Bread Feast, we see her grown boisterous, pretty, and arrogant. A young queen who teases young and old as the whim takes her, then tosses her fine blonde curls and laughs, as if to say, "Punish me if you dare, I'm Consul Buddenbrook's daughter." Aged 11, she's required to walk to school with the children of one Herr Hagenstrom, a newcomer to the town of no particular breeding. Her grandfather has already called Hagenstrom an upstart, so, naturally, Tony treats Hermann and little Julken Hagenstrom with contempt. One morning, these tensions come to their natural crisis.
My father's got 10,000 marks. How much does yours have, Tony?
My hot chocolate was delicious this morning. What did you have for breakfast, Julken?
Papa's got a lot more than that, you fool. Look what I've got for lunch. It's a lemon bun with breast of goose. What would you give to have it?
A shilling.
A shilling?
What then?
A kiss.
How dare you touch me, you skunk!
Oh, my nose! It's bleeding!
Beast! You beast, Tony Buddenbrook! Ow! Run, Hermann! She's an animal! She scratched my face! It's bleeding!
A kind papa, a worthy man, can rock the baby, sing a song, feed the children sugar plums, and stir the porridge all day long.
At home, another daughter, a fourth unexpected child, is born to Jean and Elizabeth Buddenbrook. Christened Clara, her father covers page after page of the family chronicle with ecstatic praises to the Lord for her safe delivery to a mother no longer in her first blush of youth.
O Lord, where is there any God save thee? I have taken out an insurance policy for my youngest daughter.
And this day is to be the high water mark for that blessed time, which began at the housewarming. For Grandmother Antoinette, so hale and hearty a midwife to her daughter-in-law, catches a cold soon after. It settles on the lungs, and out she snuffs, choking like a candle. At her bedside, her husband murmurs,
"Curious, curious."
There is barely an interlude to enter this sober event in the family chronicle before old Johann steps down from the firm in favour of Jean and sits humming to baby Clara all day. The sad tune runs faster and faster until,
"Tom, be helped, dear father. Christian, be something worthwhile. Little Tony. Little Tony. Be good. But not too good."
And old Johann dies in his bed, surrounded by his family. Baby Clara's short and pious life will make very little impact on our story. Of greater note are the presents the stork brings her siblings as consolation for her late entry into their lives. Tom gets a leather satchel to carry his papers. Tony, a doll. A rustic boy doll with real copper-coloured hair and blue-grey marble eyes. And Christian? A toy theatre complete with Sultan, Death, a trap door, and the devil. No composer could have chosen better leitmotifs, though in this case they were chosen by their papa, a man of no irony or musicality whatever, who as time's tide sweeps his children forward, finds himself out of his depth all too soon.
And this is our son, Betsy. This is how he's growing up.
But, John, good heavens, your father would have laughed at it. Tell it to my father and mother on Thursday and see, just see how Papa will enjoy it.
Oh, yes, no, I'm sure Kroger will laugh. He'll be delighted to find another rake in the family besides his own son. Oh. Good God, I mean, you drive me to say these things. He goes, our son, goes in secret to the theatre to watch obscene goings-on.
Jean, it was William Tell.
With a woman dressed as Tell's son, a woman, moreover, known to be a woman affiliated to Peter Dolman. A young man as fast as your brother Justus. And what does our son do? What does our son do? He takes his pocket money to Iverson's flower shop in Fisher's Lane, where Iverson knows as well, to buy roses for this woman, and presents herself in her dressing room, where, of course, Dolman is. And you be sure he splits his sides laughing and tells this woman who the ridiculous boy is, Consul Buddenbrook's son.
Christian's too young to know what he's really doing. In a way. Isn't it rather sweet of him buying flowers for a lady he admires?
Sweet? Yeah, look, of course he's too young, but the inclination shows, Betsy. It shows. And then there's Tony.
The book's well known in some circles and not frowned on by everyone.
What was Ida doing, allowing her to be reading such a thing? And where was she when Tony was seen walking out with a young student, eh? Do we even know who he was?
Only that he's a friend of Tom's and that Tom has told him you're displeased and it must cease. Tom has always been a good boy, at least. And little Clara, she's never a moment's trouble, though she misses her grandparents so very much, you know.
Yes. Tom is all we could have hoped, of course. It grieves me sorely Papa didn't live to see Tom enter the business. Oh, I miss him. He spoiled the girls, for sure. Thankfully, Clara's too young to be affected. But Tony... Remember that incident with the Hagenstrom boy and his sister?
But the Hagenstroms are not of our set at all. They are quite common. You say so yourself.
The Hagenstrom's making a lot of money these days and has worked his way onto every board and committee.
You might be pleased she defended her honour while still so young.
Honour? What honour? Now she's seen out walking with a boy we know nothing at all about.
Don't upset yourself so much, or you know... how it brings on your indigestion.
Very well. I am decided. Christian will study his classics harder, also English and French, and either make us proud by getting a place at university or travel abroad to earn his bread for a year or two. Perhaps with Mr. Richardson in London. As for Tony... she shall be sent to Fräulein Weichbrot's boarding school across town until we can find her a suitable match.
Fräulein Weichbrot, principal of the Ladies' Academy, is tiny and bent almost double, like the witch in Hansel and Gretel. But she's a good witch, with a stout heart fashioned from pure gold, who feeds her young ladies dainties at her table and lets them drink punch. Tony feels she's among her peers at last.
Why is this punch called the Bishop Armguard? Do you know?
Perhaps it's the Bishop's favourite.
Tony, here to me. I shall kiss you.
Yes, Fräulein Weichbrot.
Call me Sesame. Be happy. Mwah, you good child.
Tony is happy. And good. One roommate... Armguard von Schilling. What luck to be called von. Is really of noble birth. And Tony's other roommate, Gerda Arnoldsen from Amsterdam, though not strictly an aristocrat, is exclusive and gifted enough to be anything.
You're so lovely, Gerda. You ought to stay in Lübeck, you know, and marry one of my brothers.
Which one? The one with the big nose?
Or the other one. It doesn't matter which. You could furnish beautifully. Jacobs could do it, and I'd come and see you every day. I'll marry a businessman, of course. I owe it to Papa and the firm. What about you, Armguard? You're rich already. You can marry the man of your dreams.
Oh, I'll marry anyone with a large enough estate, so I can get up at 5 o'clock each morning and attend to things. I'd love that. I think Armgard only dreams of cows, Tony.
Mademoiselle, please go to bed. It's much too late to get married anymore this evening.
So pass 4 uneventful years for the Buddenbrooks until, one warm June afternoon, the family are found taking lunch together in the courtyard. Tom tickles the back of his sister's neck with a grass stalk, while she, deep in her book and her dignity, ignores him. Christian frowns over Cicero's second oration against Catiline, and little Clara is reading, blind, deaf, dumb, and still happy, an uplifting fable with pictures.
Tony, elbows on the table is not comme il faut.
Never mind, Mama. She's a lady now she's at school. She can sit as she likes and always be Tony Buddenbrook.
I can speak for myself, thank you, Tom.
Yes, but in how many languages?
Earl, Tom, that Rye sale's going ahead.
What's Hankton paying?
180 marks. Not bad, eh?
That's good. Pass me a peach, Christian.
I'd never dare eat a peach.
Dare?
Oh, what nonsense. Pass your brother a peach, Christian.
Why not?
Suppose, Clara, I do dare. And accidentally swallow a stone that sticks in my throat. And I can't catch my breath anymore. And I jump up. I can't.
Christian, have you really swallowed a stone?
Christian, young fool!
He's fine, just being an idiot as always.
I was imagining how it would feel.
Herr Consul, Herr Grunlich is here to see you.
Thank you, Anton. This is the agent from Hamburg, Betsy. I requested Anton to bring him here first to the garden. Do you agree?
Oh, Papa!
Of course, sure.
Anton?
Certainly, Herr Consul.
I hate it when businessmen spoil our peace.
They make our peace. You'd be having no parties or peaches without them.
You will all keep talking. How can I study? I wish I was a businessman with nothing to do but talk.
Herr Buddenbrook, this is... But I disturb the family circle, the literary pursuits.
I must beg pardon for this rude intrusion on your leisure.
Not at all, my dear man. Betsy, may I present a new colleague of mine and a keen man of business?
Enchanté. May I kiss your hand?
You are staying in town, Herr Grunlich?
A couple of rooms at the City of Hamburg Inn, gracious lady.
Couple of rooms, prig.
Mama's impressed anyway.
Shh. My sons, Herr Grunlich.
Ah.
Tom, he's joined me in the business, of course.
Herr Grunlich.
And Christian.
Herr Grunlich.
He's shortly to travel to England and work with an old colleague of mine, Mr. Richardson.
Ah, England. I love England. It is a lovely country indeed.
And here is my elder daughter, Anthony.
Fräulein. I implore you.
You can't kiss my hand.
Tony!
No, my suit is other. Indeed, I beg you to stay just as you are, not to move. Do you see, Frau Consul? Look. How the sunlight plays with your daughter's golden hair. Never have I seen anything more beautiful. May I venture to inquire what you read, Fräulein? Ah, I see it is Hoffmann's Serapion Brethren, really. He's a wonderful writer, is he not? I see Christian is reading weightier matters fitting for a man. Cicero, the great Roman orator. Makes pretty difficult reading, eh? Oh, your garden, madame. Those roses there. A most fortuitous touch that trims things up uncommonly well.
Won't you sit down, Grunlich? Cigar?
Not a moment more. Not a second more shall I steal from this enchanted and enchanting scene. I came on business only, and here is Arcady. If I may request, Herr Consul Woodenbrook.
Oh, of course, yes. Will you excuse us, my dear? Come this way, Herr Grunlich. Tom?
Of course, sir. Come with us, please.
A pleasant man, I think. He's well brought up.
Was he being funny, Mama?
The family circle, the literary pursuits... Oh, Fräulein Tony, I beg you to stay just as you are. Don't move. Do you see? Oh, fiery circle, spin.
No, stop it, Christian.
The man's a complete ass, Mama.
He has warts like a toad.
Both of you, stop this.
I think he seems a good man, Mama. But was he being funny?
Good morning.
Tony, my child.
Good morning, my dear.
Come come in and eat your boiled eggs.
Papa, how lovely you're still here. Good morning, Mama.
I've been waiting for you, Tony. Your mother and I have been talking about an important matter we'd like to discuss with our daughter.
What matter?
Eat your breakfast first, my child.
Why? What is it, Papa?
Eat.
Honey?
No, I'm finished. Papa, please.
Oh, my dear child, this letter here before me contains the main matter of our discussion. To be brief, Herr Grunlich, whom we've all come to know during his short stay in our town as a kind and worthy man, writes to say he's found himself much taken by our little girl and wishes to ask me for her hand. Formally. What does my little girl say?
Tony?
What does that hideous man want of me? What have I ever done to make him do this to me?
Tony!
Don't be so dramatic, dear. You must know your parents only want the best for you. We know you have no feelings for him. That always comes after marriage. You'll see.
I'll see nothing of the sort. How could I? I know nothing about him except he dyes his whiskers orange and has warts.
I've made inquiries in Hamburg of his banker, Kesselmeier, and other businessmen who trade with him, and they all speak most highly of his prospects. One could frame his books, they're so neat and clean. I myself have seen them.
Papa, why? I don't understand.
No, of course you don't. No, you're still very young, you know. Your head and heart are a muddle, and this is why it's best to let us choose for you.
No.
I shall write back to Grunlich myself.
Papa!
No, saying neither yes nor no, we shall talk about it more and see what we think in a week or two. Eh? There, my child. And now I must get to the office. Adieu, Betsy.
Au revoir, dear Jean. Do have some honey, Tony. One must eat. And one must marry. So what else is there? And just think, you'll have a home of your own with your own furnishings and service in Hamburg. Think of it. Now, I feel sure you must see reason when we talk more about these things. There. Well, perhaps we've already made up our mind.
No, it's preposterous. I won't. I will marry, of course I shall, but never, never will I marry Grunlich. The man's hideous and he could see I despised him. Is that why he wants to treat me like this?
That Sunday, Pastor Calling preaches a sermon about the daughter leaving her home to cleave only unto her husband. And Tony is given up to public humiliation. She sinks, cheeks afire, into her place and flatly refuses to attend church any more. The last act of this pantomime comes after a meeting. By chance, her parents insist, alone with Grunlich in the landscape room, where he throws himself to the floor in a passion.
You are rejecting me?
Yes, unfortunately.
Anthony! Behold me at your feet! You have brought me to this! You behold a man condemned to death. You despise me.
No, no. Oh, get up, please. Do get up, please.
Then you will not kill me.
No.
Say no more. That is a promise. Enough for now. I shall be back, Anthony. Au revoir.
Since then, she moves dumbly about the house, neither eating nor speaking, dreading his return, and not daring to walk outside at all, until...
This can't go on, Betsy. We can't mistreat the child. We must send Grunlich back to Hamburg and get her away for a while to rest and think more clearly. We've been too busy to go to Travemund this year, but I've just heard from old Schwarzkopf, you remember, the pilot? Mm. And he'd be glad to take her for a small payment. Tom will escort her in your father's carriage tomorrow. It's all arranged. She'll have fresh air and a nice little cottage to stay in with sensible people by the seaside. That should bring her to her senses.
Ah, Travemund, where the river Trave pours into the Baltic and the rich merchants of Lübeck pour their families for the summer, and they sometimes go themselves for the fresh air and the casinos.
I was never so happy to leave home in all my life, Tom. You can guess why.
Oh, yes, I can guess.
Get away from everyone. Everyone.
Well, the Travemunde season isn't quite over, you know, so not quite everyone. Peter Dolman's still here, of course, and Uncle Eustace at the tables. Mm. God knows how they run their business this far from town. Jogs on all by itself, I suppose. While Hagerstrom goes from strength to strength in their absence.
Of course, because Hagenstrom uses his elbows, pushing and shoving, whereas we wouldn't.
No, as for that, we all have skeletons in our closet. And Julie Hagenstrom's engaged to marry August Merlendorf, who works for Hagenstrom now. Did you know? Money talks, dear sister, so if you want to balance the scales, best marry Grunlich.
I didn't get into this carriage to discuss that man. When he knelt, you know, his wart was an inch away from touching me. I know you're right, Tom, and I should marry him, for the family's sake, but I want to forget him for now. Are they nice people, the Schwarzkopfs?
They are very nice people, the Schwarzkopfs. Diedrich, the pilot, is gallant with Tony and respectful to Tom. The wife, Meta, is small, neat, kind, and always busy. Young Schwarzkopf, when he arrives from walking the beach, is interesting and rather shy, with pale copper-coloured hair and thoughtful blue-grey eyes.
Good evening.
Well, my son, you're late. Fräulein Antony, may I present my son, Martin? He's studying to be a doctor.
Oh, pleased to meet you.
Pleased to meet you. Sorry to be late. I was reading on the beach. Then it was dark. Oh. Thomas?
Good to see you again. Afraid I've had to give up studying and join the firm.
Yes, that suits you, I think.
I'll fetch your supper, my boy.
You'll stay the night, Master Bunbrook?
Thank you, I shall. But I'll have to be off at dawn.
Won't you take some more honey, Mademoiselle Bunbrook?
Oh, no, thank you. No more.
How's the repair going to our ship, Captain?
Slow, sir, slow, tell your father. She took a rare battering in the storm. God knows how she made it into the estuary at all.
You can trust the honeycomb, Fraulein. It's a pure, natural product. You know what you're getting. The sea air will eat you up, otherwise it accelerates the metabolism, you see.
That'll be enough of your metabolism, Herr Doctor. We don't like that kind of talk around the table.
Such a pretty table. The flowers are lovely.
Yes, indeed. A most fortuitous touch that trims things up uncommonly well, as Herr Grunlich would say.
Oh, to be quiet, Tom. Good morning.
Fraulein.
Oh, please don't stop reading. I'm so sorry I'm late for breakfast. It was the punch last night. I feel very guilty. Yes, you laugh, but it was all your fault.
Morton, put out your pipe.
Oh, not for my sake. It makes me feel quite at home. I always come down to breakfast with Papa's cigar smoke filling the room.
A thousand pardons. We couldn't wait for you, Mademoiselle Buddenbrook. Oh, no. Your brother left before breakfast. Oh, these busy men. Here's coffee and fresh bread. And should you like an egg from our own hens?
All I really deserve is cold coffee, Frau Schwarzkopf. You mustn't...
No. We must fatten you up and find some colour for those cheeks, mustn't we, Morton? I'll see to boiling the eggs.
Oh, this is heavenly. I was going to bathe first when I saw the sea from my window, all calm and gleaming, but now, tell me, is it true an egg is as good as a quarter pound of meat?
You're making fun of me, like my father.
No, fun of you. I was asking because I really want to know. I know very little, you see, and you seem to know so much. I was the very laziest girl at school.
Well, then, I do believe an egg's as nutritious and far less harmful to the constitution than excessive amounts of red meat. Mm. Meat can overheat the blood, while eggs do no more harm than... Well, they don't do harm.
I see. Thank you. After breakfast, will you come down to the beach with me and tell me more about the metabolism? Look, the sky's nearly blue all over, and I long to jump into the sea. Will you walk with me after breakfast? Schwarzkopf? I'm reading The Golden Pot just now. Do you know Hoffman?
His stories are very pretty. I loved him when I was young. And Hans Andersen and The Arabian Nights.
Which book are you carrying?
Man in Health and Sickness. Not such pretty reading. I'm halfway through a chapter on nodes of the lungs.
Oh.
What we call pulmonary catarrh.
Pulmonary catarrh?
Old people get it often when they're ill too long in bed. They, well, they drown.
Drown? Mm. In bed?
In a way. They choke to death on their own fluids.
My grandmother choked to death in bed, so you might have saved her. And that's in your book?
That and lots more. Look. It's nothing but blood and entrails and brains and nerves and all the diseases flesh is heir to.
But you don't seem to mind.
I mind. That's why I'm studying medical science, to understand how we get ill and to know what to do about it and help make people well if it's possible.
When you're a doctor, I'll make sure that you become our own family physician. No! Old Grabo has to retire one day and all he does is prescribe a little pigeon, a little French bread. Wait. Oh dear, do stop!
Fraulein Buddenbrook, what is it? What's wrong? Are you tired? Ill?
Not in the least. But I must ask you something that will make you think me a perfect fool once and for all.
That I shan't, Fraulein. You mustn't mind me laughing. It's because being with you is such a pleasure.
Well then, do please tell me your Christian name. I heard it over and over last night, but I don't understand it, and it's making me dreadfully awkward because I can't call you by your name. Mine's Tony, short for Anthony. Antoinette was my grandmother's name, the one who drowned in bed. She was half French.
Well then, my name's Morton.
Morton. But why are you blushing? It's such a nice name.
Oh, nice.
Is it foreign?
It's my grandfather's name, that's all. He was half Norwegian.
Oh, it suits you. I like it. Oh dear. Look, see those basket chairs up near the bandstand, all in a cluster? I imagine I know every person in them. Let's go another way.
Certainly, but don't you want to meet your friends? I can sit over there and study. On those rocks.
Well, I suppose I should. Papa will be coming on Sunday and he'll expect me to have met them by then. I don't want to, you know. Can't I introduce you?
No, oh, no, thank you. They're not for me, Fraulein Tony. I'll just sit over here and wait for you. On the rocks.
Mademoiselle Buddenbrook!
Who's that you were with, Tony? Sitting over there. He's watching us.
Oh, that's young Schwarzkopf, Jürgen. He walked down with me.
The son of the pilot captain, but how original.
Now begins for Tony Buddenbrook a stretch of beautiful summer weeks, briefer, lovelier than any in her life. Most days she spends with Morton, though sometimes, of course, she has to be in the society of Jürgen Hagenstrom and her town friends, and he must sit out on the rocks.
Rain, Morton. We'll both have to sit on the rocks today.
Yes. Come and sit here with Mama and me. And we'll read together.
Bless you, children. I'll make some cake and hot drinks for us all.
But you know, Tony, when you're here, there are no rocks.
Morton, I wanted to ask you...
Oh, yeah, you go first.
When we first met my friends, why did you say they aren't for me? Don't you feel good enough for them? Because you are, you know, a much cleverer.
No, they, most of them, there are exceptions, of course, are not good enough for me. You're frowning. You think me terribly vain.
I know you aren't vain, Morton, and that you're good and kind and want to help everyone, but...
I'm working to be and do all these things as hard as I can. And that's the difference. You only have to be born to be important, to be powerful, to have money, to run the world I live and work so hard in. I despise the nobility, I fear. We want a nobility of merit, where all men are considered free and equal before God and the state.
But who are we, Morton? And why talk as though I'm the nobility? I only know one aristocrat, a girl from school. I'm Godfrey Schilling, and she's as good-natured as her cows, which she adores, by the way.
But you are an aristocrat. You are the new nobility. Your father may be a businessman, but he's a great gentleman in the town now, and you're a lady. There is a gulf between us as wide as the sea because I wasn't born into a rich family. You can come and walk on the beach with one of us for the sake of your health. But soon you'll go back into your own world and I'll have to sit on the rocks forever.
You've been angry all the time when you were sitting out. And I always begged you to come and be introduced.
You cannot think...
Here's cake and chocolate, and here is Schwarzkopf. It stopped raining.
Excellent, Mater. What are you young folk up to, then? Cake, mademoiselle?
Now the sun's out, I'll take Fraulein Antony along the beach, as far as the temple, that's all.
Oh, that's all, is it? Well, son, Phileas, what about going up to your room and conning your nerves and digestion? You'll soon be back in Göttingen with everything forgotten.
Dearie, for heaven's sake, these are his holidays. Why shouldn't he take a walk? Is he to have nothing of a visitor?
Is it coming or going?
What? Oh, going. That's the Burgermeister Steinbock. Sailing to St. Petersburg, I imagine.
Are you still angry with me, Morton?
I was never angry with you. I could never be angry with you. Sit down, here on the sand where it's warm. Look. I'll show you my ribbon. The colours of the revolution. This means I belong to a fraternity in Göttingen. Secretly, you understand? And it means I trust you. You must tell no one, especially Father.
Not a word, Morton. You can trust me. Just tell me simply, if you can, what it is you and the others want.
Oh. We want all men to be equal. We want there to be no more censorship or suppression of the truth or police brutality. No one standing between us and the government, but a new constitution. That's what we were promised when we threw the French out of Germany.
You threw the French out of Germany?
No, but... not me, personally. I was too young then, but... Oh, Tony. Freedom. We want freedom.
Freedom.
Freedom, you know? Who's Herr Grunlich?
Oh, was that the question you wanted to ask?
You were angry with your brother when he mentioned him. That trims things up uncommonly well. What did that mean?
Grunlich talks like that. He's a business friend of my father's. A well-to-do merchant in Hamburg who happens to have asked for my hand. In marriage. I said no, of course.
Why, Fräulein?
Why? Oh, good heavens, because he's hideous. He fawns all over my parents, and they're charmed. And however often I say no, he keeps coming to torment me. That's why I had to escape.
He must worship you.
Why should I care about that? I did nothing whatever to make him worship me.
You're cruel, Tony. Are you always so cruel? Do you really have a cold heart for anyone who worships you?
No, Morton, you can't think that of me. I know you don't think that of me. In fact, I know.
You know, and you... Tony?
Yes, Morton.
Oh, I'll work so hard, and when I come back with my degree, I can ask your father, however angry he might be. Tony?
I care a great deal more for you than anyone I know, except Papa, of course. And I'm sure he'll grow to love you for my sake.
And you'll wait for me?
Of course. Now you may kiss me.
Afternoon. At your service.
Herr Pilot Captain Schwarzkopf?
Yes?
My name is Bendix Grunlich.
Come in and sit down, my dear. Well, Tony. Your letter was a shock to us all.
You told Grunlich where I was, Papa.
He quite naturally wished to have news of you at all times. Herr Grunlich aside, my child, I myself cannot take seriously your declared attachment to the student son of a pilot captain.
Papa.
We have all, when young, been tempted to foolishness. God knows. Look at your uncle Gotthold. He marries a shopkeeper for love, is disinherited by your grandfather, and now regrets his life every day. We are not free, separate, and independent entities, Anthony. To let our hearts rule our heads, we are links in a chain, and if we break that chain, we have no anchor. I have always felt you knew this, best of all my children. You would not be my daughter if you now choose your own ill-regulated path as Gotthold did. Your mother, Thomas, Christian and I all beg you to reconsider very carefully. I shall leave you now with this, our family chronicle. It has helped me in times of turmoil and indecision, and I pray it will remind you of your family's courage and fortitude through so many generations, and thereby help you show the same strength of spirit, of your own free will.
Tony turns the pages of this Buddenbrook Bible, begins to read, and is transported by the voices of her forefathers.
Johannes Buddenbrook, 1553, Rostock. My son, attend with zeal to thy business by day, but do none that hinders thee from thy sleep at night.
Johannes Buddenbrook of Rostock, 1679, grain merchant. Today received citizen's papers and the seal and crest of the free Hansa town.
November the 22nd, 1787, at 5 o'clock in the morning, my son Gotthold was born. In the same hour was taken from me Josephine, the finest wife any man ever had, destroying all my happiness.
Today, September the 17th, 1827, at 6 o'clock in the morning, my dear wife, Elizabeth Buddenbrook, born Kröger, was by the grace of God happily delivered of a daughter who will receive the name of Anthony in holy baptism. O Lord God of Sabbath, where is there another God?
Tony gazes at her name and the empty space beneath it, dreaming, until with a jerk and a nervous, feverish grasp at the pen, she dips it in the ink and writes, mouthing the words as she does so.
Anthony Buddenbrook, September 1845. Betrothed to Herr Bendix Grundlich, merchant of Hamburg.
Christmas and 1845 come and go, while the grand house in Meng Street is as a hive of bees around its queen, who will not be married without a dress of moire antique, linen from Lentfjord, and a chance to order the workers around her mercilessly.
Ida, where is the lace for the pillowcases? The seamstress wants to know.
It is in the right-hand cupboard, Tony, my child.
Lisette!
You could go yourself, my dear.
Oh, Mama, if I'm marrying for the privilege of running up and down stairs.
Then the day comes, a day of February snow with 5 degrees of frost, when the sturdy old Mecklenburg horses, beribboned, arrive outside the door once more. The carriage is packed with parcels and boxes, and the happy couple climb on board for the first stage of their marital journey. They move off, when suddenly...
Wait! Oh, wait!
In spite of all the trouble it takes, the bride unwinds herself from her wrappings, climbs ruthlessly over her husband.
You've trodden on my shoe, dearest.
Leaps to the ground and rushes into her father's arms.
Adieu, Papa. Adieu, my good, kind Papa. Are you satisfied with me?
Oh, Tony, you're satisfied with yourself. Isn't that the important thing? The most solid happiness we can have in this world. Go now, child, and God bless you.
Tom slips away from the party as his sister drives away and trudges through the frost down narrow Fisher's Lane with his hands sunk deep in his coat pockets. Beside a modest flower shop, he pauses and then opens the door.
Thomas Buddenbrook, how was the wedding?
Good evening, Frau Lottchen. Very fine, a fine send-off. I've come to pay for the flowers, you see, already. If you'll find the bill, please, Fräulein.
Yes, sir, Buddenbrook.
Let me open the door for you, Frau Lottchen. Good day.
Good day.
I can't find it. I'm not sure it's written up yet.
Anna, leave it. I only came to see you. How are you, little Anna? Here I am, see. Let me kiss you.
Thomas! You're cold as ice. What is it? What's wrong?
Oh, you know me too well. And love me too much, I fear, darling Anna. I've come with a heavy heart.
No. Not yet. Not now.
We'll be sensible, won't we, Anna? If not, I might howl like a dog for the whole town to hear. Please don't cry. What else can I do? One has to bear such things.
When?
Day after tomorrow.
Oh, God, no. Why then? Why not in a week? 5 days? Thomas, please, a little more time.
Impossible. It's to Amsterdam and all arranged.
Amsterdam?
Because, you know, Papa represents the Netherlands as consul. And so one day shall I.
So far away. So far.
Not too far to think of one another. Or to write. I will as soon as I arrive. You'll see. Anna. Adieu, dear heart. We must start to say goodbye.
But I'll see you tomorrow.
Yes, of course. If I can get away. One's carried along. You do understand, don't you? I'm to inherit the business, so you knew in the end I'd have to make a good match. You see, I'm open with you at parting. Haven't I always been honest with you, Anna? And I wish you every happiness, but don't throw yourself away. Do you hear? Do you hear? For you haven't done that with me. I swear it.
Outside, the winter sun hurries toward a silken yellow sunset, and dark, muffled figures hurry past the window, never glancing at Tom and Anna, who in the name of common sense and good business practice share their last goodbyes.
In episode 1 of Buddenbrooks by Thomas Mann, dramatised for radio by Judith Adams, Jean Buddenbrook was played by Michael Maloney and Elizabeth by Barbara Flynn. Old Johan was Kenneth Cranham, Antoinette, Anne Beach, Tony, Claire Corbett, Thomas, Angus Imrie, Christian, Scott Smith, and Clara, Rosa Calcraft. Morten Schwarzkopf was Carl Prekop, Herr Grünlich, Ben Crow, Herr Hofstede, Sean Prendergast, Dr. Grabble, Stephen Critchlow, the pilot, Peter Marinka, Ida Jungman, Alison Pettit, Anna, Millie Binks, and Anton, Andrew Cullimore. The children were played by Jean Goodman, Diego Loss, Carolyn Cebulski, Serena Lamble, Priyanka Patel, and Spike White. The narrator was Pip Carter. Buddenbrooks was directed by Chris Wallace and is an Autolycus production for BBC Radio 4.
And the air is thick with the sound of chickens coming home to roost in episode 2 of Buddenbrooks next week at the same time. In the afternoon drama tomorrow, a retired engineer is found beaten to death in his home. Scotland Yard are on the case, but are hampered by the refusal of judges and politicians to recognise the use of fingerprints. Tether Down is tomorrow afternoon at 2:15. In a couple of minutes after the news in Open Book, the comedian and author Russell Kane will reflect on the legacy of 007 and Ian Fleming.